Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form Zen Fighting Champion John Chung, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Hello, everyone. This is Grandmaster Jesse Bowen. And welcome to our show, the AMAA, Martial Arts Masters, and we're waiting for Professor Gary Lee to get online. He's having a little difficulty in getting online, so we're going to keep moving forward until he can make the call tonight. We have a very special guest, and that is Grandmaster Keith Yates, and he's going to be with us tonight. And there's so much valuable information that we've shared. Professor Gary Lee has done an amazing job of sharing information and really building this show up. It's been going on. We just finished our one-year anniversary, and really it's been great. It's been a great opportunity to work with him. It's been a great opportunity to meet all the folks out of Texas, and we've had people from all over the country to be on his program. Again, it's based out of Texas, the Sport Karate Museum, and now, he's been doing spent years of doing a great job. Number one, as a competitor back in the day, and then with the Sport Karate Museum, and you know, with our show, and he's constantly moving things forward. He has a major event coming up this weekend in Texas, and it's going to be really pretty phenomenal this weekend. So we're really looking forward to being a part of that. So tonight we have on the call with us. We have Grandmaster Keith Yates. Hey, sir, are you with us?
I'm here. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, well, I'm doing great, sir. We're waiting for Professor Gary Lee to make our call tonight, but I guess I'll babysit. We were joking about it a few minutes ago. I may have to take over until he gets in. And I said, you know, I'm gifted with the gift of gab, so, hey, we're good. Again, welcome to the show, sir, and I know that you've got a lot of information that you're going to provide with everyone, but I want to start off by thanking you for the wonderful article that you wrote in a tribute to Grandmaster Ree and the Who's Who Legends Awards Banquet and all the things that we did there. Well, I just want to say, you know, start off by saying thank you. It was a great article. You know, really opened up some doors for us. They gave everyone an opportunity to sort of experience from your writing about the event. And, you know, so again, you know, thank you for that. So as we get kicked off
tonight, it was a great pleasure.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. So let's start off by, you know, talking about you a little bit. So who is Keith D. Yates?
Well, speaking of Mr. Ree, you know, my instructor was Alan R. Steen, who was Mr. Ree's first black belt in the United States. So some listeners may know that Jun Ree came to the United States in 1956, and he came to San Marcos, Texas, as a matter of fact, and was teaching down there and transferred to the University of Texas, where Mr. Steen was a student. And as Mr. Steen tells the story, he went to a Taekwondo demonstration and signed up immediately after witnessing the accomplishments of Mr. Ree, and worked out and made a belt out there. And hello, Gary, you here?
Hey, sir.
Yes, I am. Hi.
All right.
Hey, Mr.
Well,
Bowen.
I'm telling the story about Mr. Ree and Mr. Steen.
Oh, good. Good. I like that. How's everybody going? I'm sorry for the difficulty. Tonight. I'm sorry. Apologize for it.
No problem. Well, let me
Mr. Yates, how are you, sir?
Pretty good.
Oh, yes, please. Go ahead.
Let me keep going. So Mr. Ree was teaching at the University of Texas. Mr. Steen signed up there, and he came back to Dallas. Steen was from Dallas, and he actually opened the first commercial karate school in the state of Texas. I mean, nowadays you go around and there's karate schools on every corner, almost like Starbucks. But back then, there was only one school in the entire state, and Mr. Steen had opened that. And that's where I started in 1965. And so I was a direct black belt of Alan Steen and also under June Rhee.
Well, again, I apologize for coming in a little late, but golly bum, we're here, sitting here with Mr. Keith Yates, who is one of the Texas icons of Texas karate. Welcome again to another installment of Parts Unknown, live interview with the radio blog AMMA radio show. Master Yates, I'm going to go right into the part I missed, and that was just talking about your fabulous career. Now, most people realize that you're involved with a lot of stuff in Texas, but people don't also realize that you're also a writer and you're an editor and you do a lot of things for the community in and outside the community of the martial arts. But
right.
Again, that's how you started. And you started at a young age. You were one of the young black belts of Texas, correct?
Correct. Even though I was a young teenager, you know, 13 at the time. And nowadays you have like 5-year-olds in class. But in those days, most of the people in a karate class were in their 20s, some of them ex-servicemen who had come back, from World War II or even Vietnam a little bit later. So I was about the youngest kid in the class hanging out with 20-somethings like Skipper Mullins and Fred Wren, and those are the people that I came up through the ranks with. So when I made black belt at 17, I was one of, if not the youngest black belt in the state of Texas at the time. And interestingly enough, I achieved most of my trophies and tournament wins doing kata rather than sparring, although I did my share of sparring competition wins as well. But maybe because I was a little smaller and younger than most of those other guys, I kind of got into the kata aspect of it. And so I've written several books on that. And in fact, I'm working on another one right now.
Well, I know you got like 15 or so credits to your penmanship, but
right.
Let's go back a little bit. What was it like working out with the Skipper Mullins and the incredible fighters of that time that went on to be legends of sport karate? What was it like being a young person working out with all those incredible legends?
Well, interestingly, it was just what we were doing at the time. I mean, it wasn't until much later that I realized it. Like, hey, these guys are all like world champions, because to me, they were just my teachers, which I think is one of the cool things about the martial arts, whether you're, you know, nowadays, I just came back from the YMCA a few minutes ago where I was teaching, and I'm teaching little 6-year-old yellow belts. They have no idea that I'm a 10th degree black belt. I'm just the teacher out there. And I think that's one of the cool equalizing things about the martial arts is once you put your gi on, you know, you're just another student. You know, you're not a famous person, or a terrific champion. You're just the teacher out there. And you have to earn your respect every day while you're out on the mat as an instructor. But going back to those days, those were the days it was called blood and guts karate. Of course, this was before Mr. Rhee had invented the foam rubber sparring pads. So you went home from class and you're lips were bleeding and your fingers were bruised and you had knots on your shins. And that was just the rough and tumble days. In competition, they hadn't even come up with the idea of awarding penalty points. So if you busted someone's nose and knocked them to the ground, you got a point. And I think it was later when we started getting little kids in class that they decided, you know, we better come up with some rules that prevent people from just smashing each other in the face.
Well,
karate's come a long way.
Yeah, Texas didn't even allow headgear until like 84. So,
correct.
Yeah, we've come a long, 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 long way. Now, again, before we go a little bit more about Keith Yates, I want to emphasize one more thing. The greatness of Mr. Steen and what he did as far as laying the groundwork for a lot of the people who just went on to be incredible champions, but also martial art masters instructors. I mean, people
right.
like, of course, Art Heller and Larry Carnahan, John and Paul Worley, who went on from Texas, that went on to different parts of the country to create different things. People who are listening to the show, who are being educated on listening to a sport karate history, I think it's important to realize, or them to realize that Mr. Steen was really not only ahead of his time, but he created so many people who made an influence on the martial arts throughout the years. Don't you agree?
Oh, for sure. Dallas, Texas, was one of the hotbeds of sport karate back in the day. I mean, Chuck Norris was out in California, and there were some people in New York, Aaron Banks and Henry Cho and so forth. But Texas really was one of the foundations for sport karate, not only fighting, but even in the early days of kata as well. And like you say, a lot of the Texans went off to other parts of the country and formed their own empires, if you will, in other states. So a lot of it really started in the Lone Star State.
Now, you've been in Texas karate from the very beginning, but you're involved with some other things that are very active with martial arts other than just teaching and doing seminars. You are actually someone involved with the inside community. Like, for instance, you run an organization called Kato, and also they're the backbone also of the AKBBA. Tell me a little bit about those two different organizations.
Well, the AKBBA was originally the SWKBBA. It was Mr. Steen's organization called the Southwest Karate Black Belt Association. And a few years later, he changed the name of it to the American Karate Black Belt Association. So it originally started in 1964, and it's been going ever since. Mr. Steen, of course, has retired, but we've got a board of directors. I'm actually the chairman of the High Dan board. So we've got members all across the United States and in some other countries. And then the AKATO, which is American Karate and Taekwondo Organization, is my own organization with my own style, my own system. And we've got members in several states. I'm also involved with the Gospel Martial Arts Union, which is out of Indianapolis, which is an organization of Christian martial arts instructors. And for several years, I was on the board of Kickstart for Kids, which is Chuck Norris's group. So Chuck and I met back in the 60s, and I've known him for years and years, and they asked me to be on the board, which I was for several years as well, because I've got a real interest in helping young people. So that was just a natural fit for me.
Well, you're a master instructor, but also you're involved with, like I said, different aspects of the martial arts. One thing that I'd like to say, and I'm very, very, very proud of, is that back about 4 years ago, through Mr. Steen and yourself and the AKBBA board, we got to test Dan Anderson through the AKBBA. And I take a lot of pride with that you allowed me to have the format to do that for you guys. And this year, in fact, a couple days from now, Friday, September the 29th, you're also blessing me with coming down to test Mr. Troy Dorsey and Mr. Ishmael Robles and Mr. Gato Zubaris for their ninth degree black belt.
Correct.
You know, the AKBBA is very strong because they don't give away things. You have to really earn it through the years of tenure. But I want to say I'm really proud of the fact that Mr. Steen and your group has allowed the platform of the Living Legends to be a base to be able to do your test at. Now, this Friday that's coming up for Ishmael and Troy, there wasn't any questions about these guys being a part of this. They've been a part of this from the beginning, correct?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're some of the foundational people in martial arts, not just in Texas, but across the nation. And you probably know that Troy Dorsey is the only man to ever hold world titles in point karate, kickboxing, and actual professional boxing as well. You know, he's a world champion in all of those. And Ishmael, of course, was one of the early kickboxing full contact champions as well. So these guys have really proven their mettle in the ring. But beyond that, they're both continuing to teach and coach. And to me, that's one of the real things that we look for in awarding somebody a high rank, somebody that's continually involved in affecting not only the arts, but their students in the larger community.
Well, yeah. You know, the other thing that's really cool about Mr. Robles and Mr. Dorsey also is that they all started in point karate, like a lot of us did, and they went on to be incredible representatives and role models for not only sport karate, but martial arts in general. You know, there's something else that you're a big part of, and a lot of people don't know this, but I really want to make it public tonight, is that I remember calling you in the beginning years of the Sport Karate Museum idea, and you actually came up with the logo for the that we use for the Sport Karate Museum. And the two famous fighters that's on that logo, let's talk about them a little bit. Everyone asks all the time when I wear the patch or they see a history general wear the patch, they always say, who are those two fighters? Why are they chosen? Well, let's ask the guy who made the source. Why'd you pick those two fighters and who are they?
Well, we were trying to find a photograph that symbolized sport karate, and those two were two of my original instructors, and that's Skipper Mullins and Fred Wren, who are clashing in the ring, and that the patch design comes from an actual photograph that was from one of the AKPBA newsletters. So being a graphic designer by profession, other than just teaching martial arts, I was able to take that photo and combine the colors and the fighters and so forth into the patch that you now have for your museum. But it's a real tribute to Mr. Mullins and Mr. Wren, you know, that they are immortalized on the logo on the patch for your museum.
It was funny when I gave it to Mr. Mullins and Mr. Wren, when we first gave them out, the first thing Mr. Wren looked at it and he says, well, I still say you were running from me.
Yeah.
You know, the sense of humor that those great champions have is pretty incredible. Now, you are one of the original history journalists for the Sport Karate Museum, and you're an ambassador for other groups and stuff, but what's it like for you personally to be a part of the Sport Karate Museum and, for instance, this weekend celebrating 25 Living Legends roasts that you're coming down to and be a part of?
Well, it's always just a wonderful time to get together and meet old friends. You know, I think, you know, whether it's karate or football or, you know, some other sport, you know, you develop close ties with the people that you train with and compete with. And sometimes you lose contact over the years because people move away and get older and so forth. So this is just a great opportunity to get together and see old friends. And for people who maybe don't harken back to those days, it'll be a great opportunity for them to meet some of the legends and be able to sit down and maybe we can share some war stories and so forth. So it's just a terrific event that you put together. And, you know, all of us old timers appreciate the efforts that you put in to pull off something like this.
Yeah, but you're the Dick Clark of karate, Mr. Yates. You haven't gained it. You don't look older than you did 30 years ago. You really look the same. You maybe
have
got a little gray hair.
A little bit whiter.
Yeah, a little grayer, but, man, you still got that Dick Clark look that you don't change. now, we mentioned, you know, Friday, besides the test that we're doing, we're also honoring one of the great icons, and I know he's one of your favorite people, too. We're going to be honoring Mr. Jim Harrison. Do you have a story about Mr. Harrison, or maybe say something about him a little bit, since we're honoring him Friday night after the test?
Oh, sure. And, you know, I've even written articles and stuff about Mr. Harrison, but yeah, he's one of the icons of sport karate. And he has a fascinating story outside of karate. He was a law enforcement officer for years and years up in Missouri. And in those days, you know, you really had to use your street smarts and so forth in confrontations with the bad guys, which he did on several occasions. And you look at the old pictures of him sparring, and he always wore this black T-shirt. Now, I don't know if this is a fact or not, but I remember as brown belts, we would always look up at Mr. Harrison with his black T-shirt and say, well, that covers all the bullet holes and knife wounds in his body that he sustained while he was a law enforcement officer, which I don't doubt because he's one of the toughest guys around. In fact, Bruce Lee is reputed to have said Jim Harrison is the toughest man alive.
And he also said he was the most dangerous man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Amazing lineage coming from Bruce Lee saying that, since he's got his own reputation. Now, I want to go back a little bit to Keith Yates. Now, when you decided to become a writer, one of the fascinating stories that you tell me was that you weren't really planning on it, but we lost one of the great icons of Texas, and that was Demetrius Savannah, the Golden Greek. And you felt
Correct.
That someone needed to write a story about him. And you contacted John Corcoran, who is, we call him Corky, but he's the editor of MMA Success and used to be the editor of Black Belt Magazine. Tell me about that story a little bit for my listeners, how you started as a writer.
Well, Demetrius and I came up through the ranks together. We were on a competition team together back in the late 60s, early 70s. And so he was a good friend of mine. And when he got killed in the plane crash, we had his funeral in Dallas. And in fact, I was there at the funeral along with a lot of martial arts luminaries. And in fact, Chuck Norris was there because Chuck was in Texas filming a movie at the time. So he came to the funeral. And as I was standing there looking around at all the people there, I thought, gosh, somebody really needs to write an article about this and let the wider community know that all of these people had come together to pay respects to Demetrius. So I put together a little article and sent it, like you say, to John Corcoran over at Black Belt Magazine. He ran it and then wrote back and said, you know, I really like your writing style. Would you like to do some more articles? So after that first article on Demetrius, my second article was on Alan Steen. It was a two-part history of Alan Steen and Texas karate. And in fact, some of you all have seen the Alan Steen family tree that was in that article that I wrote. And Mr. Steen and I got together and started his family tree, and that appeared in that article on him. And since then, I've probably written 500 magazine articles, if you include all of the columns that I did for Inside Karate.
Wow.
And Kick Illustrated, because for years and years I did the Taekwondo columns in both of those magazines as well.
Well, to have two contributors like you and another gentleman, Dwayne Etheton, to do all the writing that you guys did, it's pretty amazing that you guys have done what you've done, because I know Mr. Etheton has done over 500 articles too. It's pretty amazing,
right,
that the history comes from you two guys like that. You know, Mr. Yates, you once you started writing, did you realize you had the gift of that, and that's why you started doing the books, and everything just kind of came natural then?
Yeah, I think so, you know, because I started writing, and, you know, apparently it went well because they kept asking me to write more stuff. And then I decided to go ahead and do my first kata book, which was the first book I did, because my students were asking me, you know, there's got to be a way to learn the different moves of the forms. When we go home, we can't remember what comes next. So I put together a forms book and got that one published, and then did another one on kicking, another one on self-defense. So I've written 15 books, maybe I should say authored or co-authored, because some of them I've had co-authors. I did the Complete Idiot's Guide to Taekwondo, which was a major book. So I love writing, and like I say, I'm a graphic designer, so I'm an adjunct professor in communications right now. So I'm sure a lot of the writing that I've done for the martial arts has contributed to me being able to teach as well.
One of my favorite books that you did was The Young Samurai, talking about the life of a little mouse. Tell me how that came about. I love that book.
Well, in fact, I co-authored that one with another fellow, who is a black belt of mine, and we decided that we wanted to do a children's book. So we got together and wrote the text for it, and I actually did the illustrations. So that was a little kid's book with cartoon illustrations talking about this little mouse that gets picked on. And so he goes to his mother, and he wants to learn self-defense. So she enrolls him at a karate school, and there's this sensei mouse with a little white beard who teaches him lessons of life. And at the end of the book, he faces the bullies and is able to defeat them. So it's a cute little book that's still in print. And, you know, I know a lot of schools have used it in their junior classes.
Wow, that's great. And so a book like that should be in every library, because it teaches about bullying. It's here. It shows them about martial arts. It exposes them to a level of maybe going into a karate school and learning, too. So
exactly.
I really enjoyed that book. Exactly. And I appreciate your attitude toward the kids, which, you know, I'm a big kids advocate on that level. Now, there's something else happening this weekend, besides all the incredible stuff, and we're going to talk about that here in a few minutes. But you're getting something that we do every year, through the Sport Karate Museum since we've done the roast. And it's the Editor's Choice Award, and you're actually sharing that award with one of the people you've co-authored a book with, and that's Karen Eden Herndon. But you're getting the Editor's Choice Award from the Sport Karate Museum. Congratulations on that, Mr. Yates.
Well, thanks. Well deserved. I appreciate that. Yeah, Karen was my co-author on that Idiot's Guide to Taekwondo.
Oh, okay. And she does Tang Soo Do, but Tang Soo Do is still on the basic level of Korean martial arts, so I bet that was fun. Now, is that one of those big, thick books, or is it, you know?
Yeah,
it was one book?
It was a big, thick book. I mean, it took months and months of collaboration in order to do it. And, you know, even though Karen is Tang Soo Do, you know, Jun Ri, when he first came over, was Tang Soo Do also. So
okay.
My lineage, Alan Steen's lineage, goes back through Tang Soo Do.
Well, cool. Well, I got to ask you a couple parts unknown questions, the ones that we didn't rehearse, and I want to hit you with it pretty hard. And this is not a hard question. I want to know, what's the craziest thing or the most thing that sticks in your mind that Mr. Steen did in your class that you remember the most of all?
Well, I can remember we were doing a demonstration at a, was it a restaurant or a school? I can't even remember now. But we were doing a demonstration. He was showing how you could kick, and he was famous for his sidekicks. And he actually kicked a hole in the wall during the demonstration.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, here's another one that just occurred to me. I don't remember what year this was, but at this point, Mr. Steen had already retired from competition. And over in Fort Worth, they were doing an old-timers versus the young guys competition. And so it was Mr. Steen and I want to say Mr. Burleson and some of the old guys. And there was a bunch of young guys from New York that came down. So we're at this demonstration, or it was a competition, and it was on a raised platform, and there were chairs all around the ring. And Mr. Steen was fighting this young New York guy, and he was kind of edging him over to the side of the ring. And I leaned over to the person next to me, and I said, "He's going to kick him off the stage." So sure enough, Mr. Steen did his famous step-over sidekick and kicked this kid right off the stage into the front row of seats.
Wow.
Because I had been on the receiving end of Mr. Steen's sidekick so much, I could tell it was coming.
Oh, yeah, you could predict it. Yeah, that's really cool. Hey, another part's unknown question. What about Mr. Ree? I mean, you hung out with him when you were young, too, but did you see anything really incredible that Mr. Ree did?
Well, Mr. Ri could jump up in the air with a flying sidekick and actually shoot his leg out and back and do three sidekicks before he hit the ground.
Wow.
Most people jump up and do one sidekick. Mr. Ri could jump up and go kick, kick, kick before he hit the ground.
Wow.
He was also, of course, the one who invented the foam rubber sparring gear and musical forms. And I remember one year at one of the tournaments, Mr. Ri had just finished the movie When Taekwondo Strikes, which if you haven't seen it, you can probably find it somewhere online. Look for When Taekwondo Strikes, and Jun Ri is the star of that movie. And in the movie, he plays a prisoner. I want to say he's been arrested by the Japanese, and they put him in chains, and he starts fighting all the Japanese with his chains. Well, at this demonstration of the tournament, he got up on stage with chains wrapped around him, and he did a musical form with chains wrapped around his chest while he was kicking straight up in the air. So it was pretty impressive. So Mr. Ri is an amazing, amazing martial artist and human being. You know, and I've really enjoyed my association with him over the years.
That's an incredible story. That is really cool that you share that with me, because I didn't see the whole movie, but I remember seeing the trailer and also the poster that's in my mind right now as you're speaking. And I see him in the cutoff shorts and with the chains around him. But I can see him on stage doing that. That was incredible, I bet. I bet that was simply incredible. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, this weekend, you know, everyone realizes it's going to be a lot of fun and a lot of people are going to come. It's going to be a reunion. But, you know, the heart of the whole Sport Karate Museum is that belt that Master Ri gave, you know, to Mr. Steen. And Mr. Steen wore that belt. and he passed it on to Mike Stone. Mike Stone wore it and passed it on to Mr. Burleson. Mr. Burleson wore it and passed it on to Mr. Harrison. And Mr. Harrison passed it on to myself in the museum. But that's the heart. And us talking about Master Ree and Master Steen, it just makes me feel all giddy inside, because really the heart of the museum, what I've done for 20 years, has been based around since I've got that belt. I know that's the heart of it. That when that came from those guys that we were associated with, and you were very close to those two gentlemen. So I really envy you in a way, very deeply, to be around that when you were young and the memories you had.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I started, Mr. Steen was a second degree black belt. I mean, nowadays everybody, it seems, you turn around and there's 10th degrees running around everywhere else. Well, back then, there were very few black belts, and Mr. Steen was a second degree. I mean, that was very impressive. He was more than just a first black.
Yes.
And when I went for blue belt, Mr. Steen went for third degree black belt in front of Jun Ree and General Che.
Whoa.
This was out at the Texas Instruments Gymnasium, where we held our karate classes. And I remember General Che came out in a suit and tie, and he was demonstrating. He was doing front kicks and side kicks. And he was a little bitty guy. I mean, I'm not a big person myself. Jun Ree is a little shorter than I am, and General Che was even smaller than that. But I just remember him throwing his kicks in his suit and tie, you know, as Mr. Steen was testing for a third degree. So that was quite an event.
Well, that's exciting. You know, I tell you what, I'm going to take a short break, and we're going to talk about COD Wars a little bit. So stay on the line, Mr. Yates, and we're going to come back. We're going to play the fun game called the Legends Name Game, where I say a name in front of you, and it's like a fight. For 2 minutes, you get to talk about them and say how much they influenced your life, or they're part of your life, or if you enjoyed knowing them from the time you – because I know you get to hang out with some really cool people, and I can't wait to throw some names at you. So will you stay on the line? I'll be right back with you.
Sure thing.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Yates. I appreciate it. I mean, Professor Yates. I apologize, Professor Yates. we're actually talking to Professor Keith D. Yates, and this gentleman is a history general and a historian of martial arts in general, not just sport karate, but history general in general. He knows a lot about the martial arts in general. He's wrote stories and countless articles and authored 15 books, but in Texas, he's an icon. But we'll be right back with Mr. Yates in just a few minutes. We're 2 days away from the most talked about, most fun event that's probably happening in America in a long time. It's called the Living Legends Celebrity Roast, but it's more than that. It's the 25th anniversary. And based upon the roasting of an icon in martial arts in general, his name is Mr. George Minshew, the inventor of the Karate Olympics. His claim to fame is also, he gave away the first grand championship ring ever to give away in a grand champ. I know it's old news now because people win rings and belts and all kinds of things, but back in the day, nobody got a ring unless you went to the Karate Olympics. And at one time, the Karate Olympics was one of the top three tournaments in the country, and George Minshew was responsible for that. And we're going to be roasting him on September 30th at the Hilton Galleria Area beautiful hotel in Houston, Texas. And the 25th anniversary is more than just a roast, though. It's a celebration of sport karate, starting Friday with free seminars. Or if you're the general public, you can come to the seminars and go all of them for $20. That's right, 10 seminars for $20. If you have a banquet ticket, of course, it didn't cost anything. And those will last about 3 o'clock. We got two seminars every hour. Every hour. We got Hunchy Jesse Bowen coming from North Carolina doing his mindset seminar. We got a karambit expert, Mr. A.J. Perry, Tang Soo Do expert, doing close encounters with Tang Soo Do. Green Beret, adult only. Mr. George Clark, we're doing his seminar at 12 o'clock. The one and only Mikey Rowe Moore, Fight Like a Girl with Terry Williams, doing her famous seminar that she's done all around the country now. We got Mr. Robert Hartfield doing Wushu techniques. Mr. Garrett Lee, the bread and butter techniques of sport karate. Special guest appearance, Mr. Willie Hicks, the number one fighter in the country right now. We've got all kinds of exciting things for you on Friday leading up to the black belt test, which will start at 4 o'clock with the Living Legends test. Now, at 6 o'clock, we'll be introducing Mr. J. Pat Burleson. That's right, the very first national karate champion in America. And by the way, we also have the very first national woman karate champion there. Miss Phyllis Evans will be there on Friday night also. And Mr. Burleson will be tying the belt around 6-degree black belt, Miss Mikey Rowe Moore, and also Mr. Jim Miller, the famous fighter from New Orleans, and Mr. Steve Gibson, the Silver Star recipient who's receiving the Armed Forces Award this year from the Sport Karate Museum. And then we introduced the High Don Board, people like we're talking to on the interview tonight, Professor Keith Yates, and also Mr. Roy Kerbin. Also will be introducing Mr. Richard Jenkins, Miss Linda Denley, also in attendance from the AKBBA with Mr. Ray McCallum and Steve Selby and quite a few other people from the AKBBA to witness and to certify Mr. Troy Dorsey, Mr. Ishmael Robles, and Mr. Gata Zabaris for their 9th-degree black belt under the AKBBA. And that'll be 6 o'clock Friday night, September the 29th, at the Hilton Galleria Hotel in Houston, Texas. For more information on Friday night, and you can come, it's 713-483-0476. Saturday, we do the most incredible event that we put together a long time. It's called Kata Wars. And this is an open tournament that deals with all kinds of kata divisions, from Japanese separated Okinawa divisions, Korean divisions, Chinese divisions, creative, all-American, weapons, three-man kata, breaking, and the invention that we created through my co-producer and partner, Shihan Darling McPherson, Bubble Kumite. That's right. This is for the 10-year-olds to 1-year-olds, and they actually fight the bubble machine. 50 bubbles a second comes out. Now, what makes this, it's not geared just toward the kids. We have the best kid advocates running it, people like Billy Smith, Jamie Cashin, Rooster Mackin, and Mr. Steve Parks and Mr. Dean Piles. With that said, those guys will make it fun and exciting, and there'll be a grand champion for those little kids to break those bubbles. The regular kata tournament will be going on, but at 1 o'clock, the pro division will start, and these are hand-picked first-place finishers that won hundreds of first places but never competed against each other through sanctions or protocol or tournament circuits, age, or even ego. But because the museum believes in fair competition, they've invited, invitation only, to some of the top karate players in the country to perform at Kata Wars. No second place, no third place, just a Kata Wars champion. They'll be crowned that night at the finals Saturday night. We'll take the top three finishers from the eliminations, put it with the two seeded players, and that will determine the Kata Wars champion. It's judged different. It's got the best judges in the country judging them and the best competitors, and it'll be a fun to watch. And that's Saturday at 1 o'clock in the ballroom at the Houston Galleria Era Hotel. We'll have the meet and greet at 5:30, and at 6 o'clock will be the show and performance for the 25th Living Legend Celebrity Roast for George Minshew. It's going to be a barn burner. Don't want to miss it. There is a standing room only ticket. If you'd like to be, or you'd like to be interested, please call at 713-483-0476, and we'll make sure that you get a standing room only. We have sold out, so too late to buy a banquet ticket, but we definitely want to open the doors for everybody who wants to come watch the end of the roast and also the Kata Wars final. And that's Kata Wars this weekend in Houston, Texas. Please come and share the excitement of celebrating 60 years of sport karate, honoring the 50, oh, golly bum, there'll be people either from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, and some of the top performances in the country have been asked to perform, so it is really going to be something to watch, and we're excited about putting it on and putting it on for you. For more information about the Sport Karate Museum, the work we do, please go to www.sportkaratemuseum.org. And one more thing, just to let you know, the very first seminar is Hansi Bowen, and it's his mindset seminar, but because it's so popular, we're going to bring you back at 3 o'clock for the people who don't want to be an early bird, and he'll be performing with Mr. Garrett Lee in the bread and butter technique, half the ballroom. So if you miss the seminar early in the morning, you can come back at 3 o'clock and get the another part of the Mindset Seminar with Hunter Jesse Bowen. And remember also, that's the book signing that will be going on for the Who's Who in Martial Arts. He'll have his booth there and be able to do that. So with that said, I'd like to bring back my special guest, Professor Keith Yates, and we're going to play the Legend's Name Game. Keith, are you there, sir?
I'm here waiting.
Okay, good. Well, you know, I had to pump Cotter Wars a little bit. We're 2 days away, and it's pretty exciting having all those people come and put together in one room for a couple of days. And you're one of them, so I'm pretty excited about that. So I had to tell people about it. But let's go back to the Legend's Name Game. I'm going to hit you a name, and you got 2 minutes to tell me about that person. And this is parts unknown, so don't pull any punches. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay. One of my favorite fighters of all time, and I like my people to hear about him more and more and more, that's Skipper Mullins.
Well, Skipper was really, I would say, one of the people that really got me ready for black belt, because once I made brown belt under Alan Steen, he sent me over to the brown belt class, which was in Oak Cliff, on the other side of town. And interestingly, I didn't have my driver's license then. So Jack and Marion Erickson, who were you know, very well-known black belts who started their own school, they would come by the house and pick me up, and we'd drive over to Oak Cliff for the brown belt class taught by Skipper Mullins. And so it was all the toughest people in Texas at the time, and we crammed them in this little dojo in Oak Cliff, and Skipper would put us through the paces. And I remember he would do various things, like he would tie our feet together with our belt so that we couldn't kick, so we had to just punch. And then next round, he would tie our hands behind our back with our belt, so all we could do was kick. So you really learned to use your hands if you weren't used to that, or use your feet if you weren't used to that. So he was just a very innovative instructor, as well as being, of course, the world champion that he was.
Well, how good was he? I've heard so many stories about him. I mean, how good was Skipper Mullins? I heard he was way ahead of the time for his kicks.
But Skipper Mullins was Superfoot before Superfoot Wallace.
And, okay, cool.
I'll tell you, years later, I had Skipper at a class of mine, a black belt class, doing a seminar. And he was facing one of my top black belts, and he said, okay, he said, I'm going to kick you on top of your head, and I want you to block it. And my black belt said, okay, sir. And he went, wham. And this welt appeared on this guy's forehead, and he hadn't even moved to block it. And he was like, I can't believe you just kicked me, and I didn't even see it coming. I mean, that's how fast Skipper Mullins was with his feet. He was just an amazing athlete. And you know, Skipper was a fireman too, and he retired from the Dallas Fire Department with the rank of captain.
Oh wow! I didn't realize that.
I knew
he was a fireman. But I didn't realize he was a captain. Wow.
Yeah. He retired. In fact, over the years, he's talked to me about trying to write a book, not on his martial arts exploits, but on his exploits as a firefighter and paramedic, because he has some stories he can tell you there too.
I bet. I got two rumors about Skipper, and tell me if they're true or not. One rumor was that he used to stand underneath the basketball goal and jump kick the goal.
Oh, easily. Yeah, he did that.
Easily. Oh, cool. The second rumor, I heard that he broke eight boards with a sidekick with no spacers.
Probably true. I remember him breaking five out of the Texas Instruments class. We had to get the guys with the biggest hands possible to be able to hold five boards together.
With no spacers. That's incredible. Yeah.
Skipper was skinny, but he was tall. He was 6 feet tall, but he wasn't very heavy. But because of his speed, he had tremendous power, because, you know, speed equals power.
I want to talk about somebody that we lost a few years back, but a big part of my life, and I'm sure he was a big part of your life too, and that's Mr. James Toney. Talk a little bit, my listeners, about Mr. Toney.
Well, Mr. Toney and I came up through the ranks together. We both made a black belt in 1968. I mentioned that the Ericksons would drive me over to the brown belt class in Oak Cliff. Well, again, in those days, because I couldn't drive, Mr. Toney would come and take me to his class over at the Town North YMCA, where he was teaching. He made black belt just like 6 or 8 months before I did. And because he was an adult and I was a kid, you know, he was a senior instructor. But he would come by my house and pick me up, and we'd drive over to to the YMCA and I'd be his assistant instructor. And then later we tested for third degree black belt together. And our specialty was a two-man kata, which we actually patterned after Kim Su and Takeyuki Mikami, because the two of them did a two-man kata at one of Mr. Steen's tournaments. So Mr. Tony and I took the video of that and dissected it. And in his backyard, over a period of weeks and months, we put together a two-man kata, which we performed on our third degree black belt test in front of Mr. Steen. So Mr. Tony was just, Mr. Tony was a great man and a terrific mentor to me.
Well, I got my favorite story, Mr. Tony, is that I was at his house in the latter part of his life, and Garrett and I was actually visiting him and Connie, and we're sitting there at his living room, at his table, and he says, "Gary, I have something for you. Go with me into my bedroom and go underneath the bed. There's a suitcase." And so I climbed on my knees and I went and got the suitcase, and it was locked, and he unlocked it, and there was a glove, a white glove, like a jacuzzi. And it was the actual protege glove that Mr. Ray, I guess, has sent him. And he gave that to me with his belt and his famous uniform, the Tuxedo type uniform they wore. And it was a tear-jerking moment for me to get that glove and the belt and uniform. I miss him.
Right.
I miss him a lot every day. He was a great guy. Let's go to a guy that most people don't talk about, but he's a big part of AKBBA and big part of what I've done in the very beginning part. Actually, I was my ride at Mr. Steen's 60th birthday party, and that's Mr. Richard Jenkins.
Well, Richard was the program director at the North Dallas, Texas Karate Institute, where, in fact, James Tony and I were the senior instructors, and Richard was the program director there. Interestingly, Mr. Steen was one of the first ones who had a two-tiered staff. He had the black belt instructors and then the program directors. And so we would teach the class, and the program director would sign people up. Now, Richard was obviously a very talented martial artist as well, but he was a terrific salesman and businessman. So he ran that North Dallas, Texas Karate Institute for Mr. Steen. And that's where I first met Richard. But over the years, I know Richard has traveled all across the United States and helped other people set up their martial arts businesses because of his experience there. And, he taught and competed all over. So Richard is just a fantastic martial artist. And because he's a good salesman, he'll talk your ear off, too, if you let him. But he's just a great guy.
Well, that he is, and he'll be part of the exam board coming up. But a couple more old-timers. One of my favorite people, again, and just part of that Texas history, Mr. Ed Daniel. Tell me about Ed.
Mr. Daniel, of course, was not in the Allen Steen family tree. He was, Okinawan style. But he had a school downtown Dallas. And, of course, Ed Daniel was a Dallas police officer. And he had a school upstairs in downtown. And Mr. Steen would send us brown belts over to Mr. Daniel's school to get us ready for exams or competitions. And you know, we called him Big Ed because he's like 6'6" or 6'7". And so he was a huge guy, still is. And, just a very gracious but intense individual, being a police officer and a world champion. And, he, of course, fought Joe Lewis for one of the first full contact matches.
Were you there? Were you there to watch that fight?
Well, you've seen the videos, right?
Yes.
Online and so forth. I shot those videos. So the one of him fighting Joe Lewis, and he and Lewis are fighting, and of course Lewis knocks him out. And also the video you've probably seen of Jim Harrison and Fred Wren
and Victor Moore
fighting.
Oh, I've seen that
Victor
one too.
Moore.
Yes. You filmed that too?
Yeah, I filmed that too because I was.
Wow.
It was actually with Marion. I mentioned Marion Erickson. It was her camera, so she was sitting there filming it. But she was getting so excited she couldn't keep the camera steady, so she handed it to me and said, "Here, you film these." So those things that you.
That film is Fred and Jim Harrison. That's priceless because it's gone around the world, and it really is the epitome of what was going on back then. And there's not really many. fights like that. I mean, there really isn't. It shows that.
No, you can actually see them kicking and punching each other for real, you know, knocking each other down and so forth. So when you talk about the blood and guts days, you know, that's one of the few proofs, you know, behind just stories of us old timers. It's like, boy, I could really see them hitting each other there.
And what was crazy back then, even in my era and our era growing up, was that we would have wars like that. Nothing like that, really, but we were friends outside the ring. And I know that Mr. Wren and Mr. Harrison are just dear, dear friends, too.
Right, and I think that's another difference between the old days and now sometimes, because people fought really tough and sometimes even hurt each other. But as soon as the match was over, you're just best buddies. Sometimes now you see after a tournament, people are still complaining and yelling at each other and so forth. So I think the sportsmanship sometimes is lacking today, even though the guys in the olden days were even tougher than the modern people. They were still the best of friends and had supreme sportsmanship. And maybe that comes from the fact that you knew somebody could kill you in the ring, so you had to be friends with them outside.
Well, since you're an avid kata competitor and you said on the air that you like kata a lot, who is your favorite kata competitor today? We'll go back to the Legends Inc. I'm just curious, do you have a favorite kata competitor today that you admire or someone that impressed you maybe not too far back?
Well, you know, I remember when John Chung and George Chung and Cynthia Rothrock, I had judged all of them in competition. You know, and they were just very talented kata competitors. And the thing I appreciated about them, and that they're of an older era now, but, you know, they really did traditional forms with meaning and bunkai behind them, whereas a lot of the more modern forms where you jump up in the air and do a backflip and land in a split. I mean, certainly there's a tremendous amount of athleticism. I mean, frankly, I couldn't do it even in my best days.
There's no application.
But it's like, you know, you're not going to do that when a bunch of Hell's Angels surround you and you're going to do full splits on the ground. So
Have you had a bunch of Hell's Angels surround you before, Mr. Yates?
No, well, you can ask me about that later.
Okay, I will.
You were asking me who I enjoy today, and you know, William Shelton is on the latter end of his career. William Shelton is one of the best kata men out there today, and he really performs with a sense of bunkai and traditionalism. And you know, he does both taekwondo and Japanese karate, and you can really see it in his performances. And I think William will be there this weekend too.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite competitors, and you know, he's been invited to Kata Wars. You know what's really strange, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on the air. I was sitting here. And this is how the karma works between you and I, Dr. Yates. I was sitting here and I was thinking about William Shelton, and you started speaking about him. I'm telling you, I'm not making that up. He, you know, he said something real kind to me a few years back, and I'll never forget it. I'd like to share it with you. He says, Mr. Lee, you know, when you first came here, you wore a black uniform, you did Japanese kata, and nobody understood, and people would even make fun of you. And now I get standing ovations when I do Japanese kata, and I think back of other people who established it, and people didn't understand it. Now Japanese kata is kind of the base of everything, and I just want you to know that maybe you didn't get the right scores you did. Well, you know, to me, it wasn't about winning. It wasn't even about the right scores. It was just performing and doing something maybe Texas hadn't seen a lot of. And I know in the late 70s and the 80s, not a lot of people were doing Japanese kata, but so I take a lot of pride in knowing William and what he's done. And, you know, he dedicated and also gave his kamas that he won all those championships with to the Sport Karate Museum. So God bless William Shelton. I sure hope he comes this weekend. I really do. I invited him personally, and, you know, I hope he does perform. That'd be really great.
Well, you know, he also appeared in my book, Just for Kicks. One of my books is called Just for Kicks, talking about the kicks of the martial arts. So I had William do a lot of the modeling for that because of his fantastic kicks. So, you know, it's when both of us look like we're teenagers in that book. I need to bring a copy and let you see it.
Oh, absolutely. But he's another guy. He doesn't age either, you know? I hate you guys that don't age, okay?
Now, he's still got dark hair, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's because he's got that Asian culture a little bit.
Let's go up a little bit.
Someone that everyone knows, and I know you're real personal friends with him. You actually work for him, but like I said, I know you're personal friends with him, not just a name say or name dropper, but you're personal friends with Mr. Norris. Tell me about your relationship with Chuck.
Well, I first met Chuck actually when I was a brown belt, and he was coming into town from California for Mr. Steen's tournament, and I mentioned I didn't have my driver's license. Well, I had just gotten my driver's license, okay? So Mr. Steen called me up and said, Chuck Norris is coming into town. He needs a ride to his hotel. I want you to go to the airport and pick him up. Now, Chuck Norris was not a movie star or TV star at the time, but he was a famous karate guy. So I was going, oh, my gosh, you know. So I had to go to the airport and pick up Chuck Norris. And, you know, so he's asking me questions like, you're going to go for black belt soon. Well, congratulations. I wish you good luck. And he's talking to me. And he was just the nicest guy. So I was very impressed with him as an individual and not just as a karate champion.
Right.
And then years later, you know, he asked me to be on the board of Kickstart. So we served, or I served on his board, I should say, for a number of years. And, Chuck and Gina, his wife, are just the greatest people. You know, he does a lot of philanthropic stuff for kids, a lot of stuff for the military and so forth. So besides being an outstanding karate champion and actor, he's just a terrific human being as well.
Did you watch Chuck fight in the day? Did you get to watch him fight in the tournament?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The thing that struck me about Chuck Norris was he was a terrific counterpuncher. You know, he wasn't as aggressive as someone like Fred Rand, for example, but, you know, somebody would make a move, Chuck would block it and then hit him back. You know, he had superb timing, you know, very fast, you know, in a real sense of what the other person was going to do and how to counter it. So, Chuck Norris was a true champion and one of the earliest champions of martial arts. And he really popularized, sport karate. Because he was, you know, from California and good looking and, you know, started getting into the movies and so forth. So, I mean, he was one of the real influencers of martial arts in the United States.
Well, people don't realize that in 2017, that he was a real champion. And to hear it from a pioneer like you to say that, they actually saw him fight, that's pretty cool because everyone thinks that he's just a movie star and he's just acting and they don't realize that he was a real champion and he influenced so many people. I heard one thing about
right.
Mr. Norris too, that he was doing like spin back kicks and other like those type of kicks way before a lot of people really could execute them well and score with them. Is that true too?
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, he was Tung Sido. And so he
right.
learned in Korea. He was in the Air Force stationed in Korea. So he learned some of the kicks from the Korean Tung Sido people and brought them back to the United States. So he was doing kicks along with the era of Skipper Mullins and Joe Lewis and those guys. You know, and Tung Sido, like I said, was actually Mr. Ri's system when he first came here. And
right.
so a lot of us old Taekwondo, quote unquote, people are actually Tung Sido, which was the Korean version of karate. So when I started out, I did Japanese forms. I did Tung Sido forms, which were basically from Shotokan. So it's just kind of interesting that the modern Taekwondo movement all happened after I was a black belt.
What is the difference between, since I know you're a historian, what is the difference for my listeners? What is the difference between Mudokwon Tung Sido and Subak Tung Sido?
Well, when General Che came up with the name Taekwondo, back in the mid-50s, several of the Koreans didn't want to adopt that new name. So the Mudokwon school, half of them went with Mudokwon Taekwondo, and half of them stuck with Tung Sido. So there's Mudokwon Tung Sido and Mudokwon Taekwondo. And so there was that split in the Mudokwon school. You know, there were five major kwans or schools of Korean martial arts. and most of them adapted the new name Taekwondo. So, for instance, Mr. Ri was Chungdoquan. So there was the Odoquan and the Chungdoquan and the Mudoquan and the Jidoquan, and most of them adapted that Taekwondo name. But like I said, some of them didn't, and so that's why you still have Mudoquan Tang Sudo.
Well, good answer. I appreciate that because a lot of people get confused. It's like Shunryu. I mean, Shunryu, there's 8 different families, and, you know, there's so many different ways of cultures of doing it.
Right.
Now, I want to do one more legend, and this is someone that is, well, you know, I don't know if you ever met him or not, but we talked to him a little bit earlier, and he made an influence on everybody. How much did Bruce Lee make an influence on you?
Well, I saw Bruce Lee at one of Mr. Steen's tournaments, but I was just a lower belt. You know, everybody was surrounding him, so I never went up and shook his hand. So I saw Bruce Lee in person, but I never met him or trained with him. But certainly he was a seminal influence in the martial arts because of his movie and his film work, because everybody knew who Bruce Lee was. And obviously, besides that, he was also a really talented martial artist. You know, it's funny, sometimes with my students, I'll play the game of, you know, what karate, quote unquote, people in the movies or on TV are actual black belts. And it's really hard for people to guess, especially now, you know, so it's like they're surprised to find out that Elvis Presley was an actual black belt.
Right.
You know, Steven Seagal is an actual black belt, you know, but then there are some other people that you see on TV or movies that you would think are black belts, but they trained in the martial arts, but they don't actually hold a black belt. You know, James Caan, who's a famous movie actor, is a high-ranking black belt under Fumio Demura. You know, a lot of people don't know that. And so it's fascinating to look at the entertainment world and see who are really martial artists or not. And Bruce Lee was a terrific martial artist and certainly popularized the martial arts throughout his film career. And so a lot of us owe, you know, our careers to the fact that he popularized it way back in the day.
Besides your books, your teaching, your legacy of Texas karate, what would you like your students to remember Keith Yates as and was after you totally retire from this, which I don't really see you retiring because I think you're going to be right until forever. But what do you want to leave as far as the legacy of Keith Yates?
Well, next year I'll be celebrating 50 years as a black belt. And one of the things that has been most gratifying for me through 5 decades of teaching is the students. And, you know, sure, I've had some people that have won tournaments and so forth, but I don't want to be known as, you know, a producer of champions. I want to be known as a producer of quality individuals. And so I'm really proud of all the people I promoted to black belt. You know, and in many ways, you know, they've come up to me and said, you know, my life is different because of you and because of the martial arts. And for me, that's why I continue to do this all these years later, because, you know, those of us that continue to teach are affecting young people's lives and we're making better human beings. I had lunch just last week with a student of mine whose kids are black belts under me. And he was just talking about, you know, they're in college now and doing really well and how much they owe to the martial arts training that they've received under me. And to me, that's why I continue to do it and what I would like to be remembered for.
Well, you're certainly going to be remembered for a lot of quality in what you've done. What's Ishmael and Troy and Gato going to expect in an hour and a half of putting underneath the scrutiny of you guys? Well, just give me an idea of what they're going to be, what you're going to be looking for.
Well, see, I can't tell you that in front. So, you know, they've got to be under pressure when they get up there.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm halfway kidding.
Do I have to leave?
I
was told by one of the guys to put an ambulance parked out front. I should leave the ambulance out front. Okay.
Well, all of them want to perform. And, you know, technically speaking, if you're going for 9th or 10th degree black belt, you don't necessarily have to get up and perform because there are more honorary ranks than anything else. Given
yes,
in in response to everything you've done for the martial arts, but these guys all want to get up and do something. And so I know that they've got demonstrations prepared to get up and do it. And recently we had another AKBBA test where Ray McCallum went for a 10th and Dan Anderson went for 10th. Now Rudy Smedley went for 10th. Steve Selby went for 9th, and they all got up and prepared a demonstration in front of Mr. Steen, myself, and Mr. Kerbin, some of the other board members. And to me, that's just gratifying that people still want to get up and physically do something and not just get a handshake and say you're a 9th degree black belt. So these guys, even though they'll be nervous to get up and perform in front of the board that they'll have to, you know, that's something that they want to do because that's just part of the tradition and the discipline of martial arts. So it's going to be an exciting evening.
As we wind down the show, how important is it for people like yourself, which is classified historians, that we do a sport karate museum? I know there's another institution that we both support. It's out in California. It does the culture of the martial arts, but you know, the Sport Karate Museum only concentrates on sport karate from 1946 when Trias opened the first sport karate school to 2000, actually. And we just opened it up recently to that group from 2000, 2017. But in your opinion, as a professor and who you are, what we've explained tonight to our listeners, how important is it that we have a sport karate museum and keep that history in front of people?
Well, I think it's really important because the growth of the martial arts in the United States was due to sport karate. Certainly there were some people teaching traditional karate, you know, in their garage dojos and so forth. Now, that's the way they did it in Japan and in Korea. But Americans wanted to see if it really worked. And that's what sport karate afforded the public, where people got out there and in the ring and they fought and there was a winner. And so the Americans wanted to see that, and that's what caused the growth of the martial arts in the United States. If there wasn't sport karate, I'm afraid that martial arts may still be just in garage dojos somewhere. But because of sport karate and the Olympics and the karate that was performed on TV, like in the wide world of sports and so forth, karate martial arts gained a following. So really the popularity of the martial arts was due in large part to sport karate. And it's important that we have a museum that honors those people that did that popularization of the martial arts.
Well, you know, what's really cool is that the statement that we've been saying all year, the new statement, the old statement is protecting the history one warrior at a time. And that always will be used. But one of the new statements that we produced this year is that we are all Asian influenced, and we are, all of us, whether it be Japanese, Korean, Chinese, Okinawan, but sport karate was born in America. And I think with that statement you just said, it kind of says that in general, because it was born here, and it is going to be allowed as a demonstration sport in 2020 as part of the Olympics. And with one of the last questions I'd like to ask you, how do you feel about that? So finally, after all these years of what Mr. Anderson went through, Toki Hill went through, what the WUKO people went through, now, finally, it's a demonstration sport. And how is karate going to change the vision of, you know, sudden impact taekwondo that's been all these years? It's been different type of fighting and no kata. Now there's going to be kata and maybe bunkai. What's it going to change? Is it going to change the views?
Well, I think it really will. I mean, right now, you know, there's some popular YouTube videos of, you know, the Japanese kata competition, and they've gotten just millions of views. And I think there's a real hunger to see traditional karate and sport karate too. And the thing that obviously is different about karate than taekwondo is they're going to be punching.
Right.
And I think the average non-martial artist watches taekwondo and they say, well, why didn't he just punch him? You know, it's all kicking. Interesting. I just finished an article on Herb Perez, who was the Taekwondo gold medal winner. And he's got a real interesting take on the future of Taekwondo in the Olympics. And, you know, I won't go into detail. You can get the next issue of Martial Arts Success and read the article that I wrote on Herb. But he says there's a lot of turmoil going on right now in the Taekwondo Olympic movement. And so maybe we're going to see karate take over.
Wow, that'd be really interesting. And but it's come a long ways, as you said, from your early idea of competing and getting a trophy and earning just 2 points to going into the Olympics as a demonstration sport. And with that said, I'd just like to say that thank you, Professor Yates, for your time tonight and explaining some things that are really intricate that need to be told as far as the history goes. And I'm going to ask you again, you got so much information. Would you come back again and let me do a part two interview with Keith Yates? Because I feel we got so much more to talk about, and we cover some of the things we didn't cover that are fun things to talk about. But I think we could do a part two Keith Yates show without a doubt. And if you'd be so kind to do that, I'd like to bring you back and do a part two Keith Yates, because I think my listeners would be interested.
Anytime you want to do it, I'm at your service.
Well, again, congratulations on your Editor's Choice Award this weekend and coming down and sharing the 25th anniversary. We've been with Professor Keith D. Yates, amazing person and historian for martial arts in general, Arthur, and just one of the good guys of sport karate. Thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate you spending the evening with me, Dr. Yates. I really appreciate it. I keep calling you doctor, professor. I'm sorry, but you know, you're one of these guys that I respect you so much. I want to call you, you know, the title that you deserve. So officially, you're a professor of theological science, and you're a master teacher, correctly?
Right, and I tell my students just to call me Mr. Yates. You know, so if they start to say Grandmaster Yates, I said just Mr. is fine with me.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate your humbleness. That just goes to show all these people that I've interviewed all these years, they do the same thing, because all of them are almost in the same way as you did, showing that humbleness of the true spirit of the martial arts. I appreciate your time so much. Hunchy Bowen, are you on the air, sir?
Yes, I am, sir.
Well, another incredible interview with one of these incredible gentlemen from martial arts, Mr. Keith Yates. And I know that you guys are going to be doing something in the future and keeping things in order. And he'll be there for the book signing this weekend, which you'll be there, and also with your seminar with Mindset. And by the way, I told my listeners there will be two Jesse Bowen seminars, one at the early morning bug and one at 3 o'clock for the people who miss it. And would you like to say something to Mr. Yates before he gets off the air?
Well, you know, I said earlier, you know, I really respect him. I've read a lot of his articles that he's written, and, you know, he's an icon, and, you know, I try to follow that, and, you know, again, thank you for that. I know this weekend we're going to have a lot of fun, and, you know, we have now launched the Zen Mind Body Mindfulness book, the audio program, everything's going to pre-launch this weekend, and we really want to share with martial artists and with anyone, but especially with martial artists, how to be able to use this program to open other doors in their school, which, you know, for stress management, you know, meditation, getting understand the power of our mind and the thoughts that we have and how much it influences what we do. And tomorrow at 12 o'clock Eastern time, I'm going to be doing a special program with Dr. Paul Geyer. And the program is called The Power of You. And this is where we're trying to go. Even with the Who's Who book, the Who's Who book is about individuals having an opportunity to write about themselves, to get a location, where am I in life, where have I been? And for many people to have that chance to go back and say, wow, I've done a lot with my life. Or for some people, they have a chance to say, well, I didn't really do a lot with my life, but it's never too late to start now and utilizing your life. You know, what is your life purpose? So we're moving. That's what I feel like the book is cultivating. It's cultivating the opportunity for people to think about who they are, to think about where they are, and then how to move forward. And now with the meditation program, we give them a system to go in and change the programming, which may be bad programming. So every day we use our mind, and what we really want to do is to promote a sense of inner art, the art of mindfulness or the art of meditation. And that's what we're going to be talking about this weekend. I'm very excited. Last year was a big blast. And this year you've got, it feels like you have twice the amount of opportunities for people to participate in things. I know you have probably almost twice the number of people participating. So we're really excited for you, sir.
Well, I'm sold out, and that's pretty cool. But we've opened the doors to anybody for the seminars. That means that you can come to one seminar or for $20, you know, donation to the museum, or you can come to all 10. Where are you going to do that at? Anywhere in the country. You can't do that. You have to go to all 10 seminars for a $20 donation and have fun during the day. And, of course, that takes care of the tests and the party that night and the Jim Harrison tribute. So best $20 you can spend anywhere in the country. So with that said, I'd like to say thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And, you know, what I'm saying, you know, I'd like to say to everyone, you know, I know my life was changed over 40 years ago when I was introduced to meditation, and not just meditation, the dynamic meditation. And actually from Laredo, Texas, the Silver Method Training, one of the most powerful personal development programs in the world. And, you know, the $20 that you donate to the museum, you know, the time that you spend, a couple hours you're going to have being involved in this program, I promise you it will be a life-changing experience.
Well, we're looking forward to having you this weekend, and looking forward to seeing you too, Dr. Yates, Professor Yates. I keep calling you doctor. I'm sorry.
Mister is fine.
Mr. Yates. I'll keep saying it. But if I say it this weekend, please don't hit me in the head or kick me in the head, as you Taekwondo guys do. Well, again, thank you for a great evening. And don't forget, October the 3rd, our next show will be the one and only Daryl K. Stewart, the NBA arbitrator for the National Black Belt League for the past 15 years. We got upcoming shows with Benny Akitas and some really cool people. So stay tuned to the AMMA Masters Radio blog. Thank you again for letting us come into your home and share with you a sport karate moment. With that said, aloha, everybody. Mahalo.